Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is Bill. Welcome to this week's episode of Real World Fitness. Hope everybody's having a great week. Today, we're going to finish up that great interview with Brooks Kubik and Clarence Bass we started last week. And we've also got my friend Lisa here with a couple interesting articles on nutrition that she's going to share with us. Next week's guest, I'd like to just briefly discuss that before we get started. Next week's guest is a gentleman named Mark Halpern. He is a nutritionist and a strength coach and personal trainer in Salt Lake City, Utah. He is part of Dan John's training crew, so to speak, the intentional community that Dan always is talking about, all the people he trains with on a daily basis. Mark is one of those. And he's starting his own website, findtimeforhealth.com. And we'll talk with Mark about the website and his background and a few other interesting things. And that's next week. And now let's get to Ms. Lisa Flanagan with some interesting nutrition information for us.
Hi, everybody. I'm going to read two articles today written by Michael Greger, Dr. Michael Greger. He shares some good nutrition facts at nutritionfacts.org that I subscribe to. I just get emails once a week about different nutrition things. So the first one I'm going to read today is nuts may extend your lifespan by about 2 years. We've known that increased nut consumption has been associated with a reduced risk of major chronic diseases such as heart disease and diabetes. But do those who eat nuts actually live longer lives? Clinical trials have shown nuts help lower cholesterol and oxidation and improve our arterial function and blood sugar levels. Does all this translate into greater longevity? Researchers at Harvard examined the association between nut consumption and subsequent mortality of over 100,000 people followed for decades. In that time, tens of thousands died, but those that ate nuts every day lived significantly longer. Daily nut consumption had fewer deaths from cancer, heart disease, and respiratory disease, even after controlling for other lifestyle factors. Nut consumers lived significantly longer, whether they were older or younger, fat or skinny, whether they exercised more, smoked, drank, or ate other foods that may affect mortality. But nuts are so filled with fat that there may be a concern that frequent nut consumption can result in weight gain. However, that's not what the Harvard researchers found. In fact, other studies have associated nut consumption with a slimmer waist, less weight gain, and lower risk of obesity. If we look at all the studies put together, it's pretty much a wash. Diets enriched with nuts do not seem to affect body weight, body mass index, or waist circumference much at all. For example, one of the most recent such studies highlighted in his video, Nuts May Help Prevent Death, in which subjects were told to add either 0, 70, or 120 pistachios to their daily diet as an afternoon snack every day for 6 weeks, found no noticeable difference between the three groups. You couldn't see any difference with those eating no nuts and those eating more than 100 nuts a day. It appears that the incorporation of nuts, around one or two small handfuls a day, would be advisable to ensure various health benefits without the risk of body weight gain. How nuts do we have to go? Not much. Just a few servings a week may boost our lifespan and lower cancer rates, but it appears we have to keep it up. In the pre-dimed study, when longtime nut eaters were told to cut down on eating nuts or choose extra virgin olive oil, within 5 years, they apparently lost much of their longevity benefits. Only the group that started out eating nuts and continued to eat at least the same amount of nuts died significantly less often. You can find out more on nuts and heart disease in his videos, Nuts and Bolts of Cholesterol Lowering. Again, the doctor's name is Dr. Michael Greger. Good stuff. Second article is, how many glasses of water should we drink a day? And this is a question lots of people are asking. More than 2,000 years ago, Hippocrates said, if we could give every individual the right amount of nourishment and exercise, not too little and not too much, we would have found the safest way to health. What does that mean when it comes to water? Water has been described as a neglected, unappreciated, and under-researched subject. But a lot of the papers extolling the need for proper hydration are funded by the bottled water industry. Turns out the often quoted drink at least 8 glasses of water a day has little underpinning scientific evidence. Where did they come up with that then? The recommendation was traced back to this 1921 paper in which the author measured his own pee and sweat and determined we lose about 3% of our body weight in water a day, which comes out to be about 8 cups. Consequently, for the longest time, water requirement guidelines for humanity were based on just one person. But now there's evidence suggesting not drinking enough may be associated with falls and fractures, heat stroke, heart disease, lung disease, kidney stones, bladder and colon cancer, urinary tract infections, constipation, dry mouth, cavities, decreased immune functions, and cataract formation. The problem with many of these studies, though, is that low water intake is associated with several unhealthy behaviors, such as low fruit and vegetable intake, more fast food, less shopping at farmers markets. And think about it, who drinks lots of water? Those that exercise a lot. No wonder they have lower disease rates. Only large and expensive randomized trials could settle these questions definitively. But given that water cannot be patented, such trials seem unlikely. So we're left with studies that link disease with low water intake. But are people sick because they drink less, or are they drinking less because they're sick? There have been a few large prospective studies in which fluid intake is measured before disease develops. For example, a Harvard study of 48,000 men found that the risk of bladder cancer decreased by 7% for every extra daily cup of fluid one drinks. So a high intake of water, like 8 cups a day, 8 times 7, may reduce the risk of bladder cancer by about 50%. Potentially saving thousands of lives. The accompanying editorial commented that strategies to prevent the most prevalent cancers in the West are remarkably straightforward in principle. To prevent lung cancer, quit smoking, stop breast cancer, maintain your ideal body weight and exercise, and to prevent skin cancer from the sun. Now comes this seemingly simple way to reduce the risk of bladder cancer: drink more fluids. This is probably the best evidence we have for a cutoff. 20,000 men and women in the Adventist Health Study, about half vegetarian, so they were also getting extra water by eating more fruits and vegetables, and those drinking 5 or more glasses of water a day, had about half the risk of dying from heart disease compared to those who drank 2 or fewer glasses a day. And like the Harvard study, this protection was after controlling for other factors such as diet and exercise. So they suggest it was the water itself, perhaps by lowering blood viscosity or thickness. So based on all the best evidence to date, authorities from Europe, the United States, Institute of Medicine, and the World Health Organization recommend between 2 to 2.7 liters of water a day for women. That's 8 to 11 cups a day for women and 10 to 15 cups a day for men. Now, but that's water from all sources, not just beverages. And we get about a liter from food and the water our body actually makes. And so these translate into a recommendation for women to drink 4 to 7 cups of water a day, and men 6 to 11 cups, assuming only moderate physical activity at moderate ambient temperatures. We can also get water from all the other drinks we consume, including caffeinated drinks, with the exception of stronger alcoholic drinks like wines and spirits. Beer can leave you with more water than you started with, but wine actively dehydrates you. Note, though, in the cancer and heart disease studies, he mentioned the benefits were only found with increased water consumption, not other beverages. So unless you have conditions like heart or kidney failure, women should drink 4 to 7 cups of water a day, and men should drink 6 to 11. Good stuff.
What people have to remember is they're talking about cup, a measuring cup. Now, you know, when you talk about how many cups of coffee, the mug I drink in the morning is like 3.5 cups. So it looks like this new research, the numbers haven't changed all that much. We're still looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 cups of water a day. So just drink more water.
And eat more nuts.
And exactly. You know, the question I have with that article, though, it doesn't get into specific nuts, because, you know, we all know people have issues with peanuts, and the only nuts it mentions are pistachios, and they're just about the most expensive ones out there other than, I don't know, macadamia nuts. So I wonder if there are some studies on specific nutritional values and benefits of specific nuts.
That's a good question. I know I eat almonds and pistachios all the time. Those are my favorite snacks. I do stay away from peanuts pretty much, but almonds and pistachios are great, but both of them are expensive.
Yes, they are. Now, I go to a nut guy at the farmer's market we go to, and when I'm feeling like treating myself, I get macadamia nuts. The rest of the time, it's a mixture of walnuts, pecans, and almonds.
Hmm.
And I've noticed just when I eat peanuts or peanut butter or anything peanut related, I get a little congested, a little sniffly. Peanuts don't like me. Most people aren't aware of things like that, though. They don't pay attention. It's like, pay attention to how you feel when you eat certain things, and you might notice there's a mild food allergy there.
Right. And peanuts aren't actually a nut anyway, so we probably shouldn't include that in, one of the good snacks.
Okay. I've forgotten about that, but that's true. They're actually considered a seed, aren't they?
Or a legume, yeah.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much, Lisa. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice, and you're awesome at finding this information, and I'm sure you'll have something great for us for next week as well. Before we get to the other half of the interview, I'd like to remind everybody, my favorite reading source, can't talk today, audiblepodcast.com/Saratalk. You'll find Dan John's books there. You'll find anything by whatever your favorite fiction author might be is there, whether it's Stephen King or, I'm not even thinking of names right now, but there's thousands of books there. I just like going to the site and seeing what's new every now and then, because I'm amazed. And books that are read by professionals or that are read by the author in some cases just are more fun. I love books that are actually read by the author because they emphasize the things that they wanted to emphasize. And, you know, a stranger can't necessarily do that. So take that advantage of that free 1 month trial and go to audiblepodcast.com/Saratalk and grab yourself a free audiobook and sign up and keep on going with it. It's a great source of a lot of really, really good information. And now, without any further ado, we'll get to the second portion of that interview with Brooks Kubik and Clarence Bass. And if you didn't hear part one, go in the archives and listen to last week's show.
I was interested to hear Bill Pearl said that he had converted all of his books to ebook, and I'm interested to hear Brooks talk about that. We've not done that. I'm wondering what the effect is on the hardcover book sales. I'm thinking that when we have to reprint some of our books, we probably will explore that. I know that there's a possibility of selling in much greater volume because the price is way down. I'm just a little concerned about what it's going to do to my paper books. I like to have a book in my hand because I like to mark on it. So, but Carol has any that likes the e-book. So I know that's the trend, and we're going to have to work our way into that some way or other.
Well, there's always the option that Brooks is doing. He's still producing the hard copy courses and books, but I'm going to guess possibly in smaller quantities based on, depending on what you see with the Kindle products. Brooks?
Yes, it's a real balancing act. It's very interesting because Clarence, I am going to guess, has a library like mine, which is like, you know, books everywhere, all through the house, and you're constantly walking around with a book in your hand and picking things up and reading them and so on, and you've been doing that your whole life. You know, as lawyers, you would expect, guess what? We read a lot. And I bitterly opposed the whole idea, the whole concept of an electronic book, because I wanted something that you could hold in your hand, put on your bookshelf. You can make notes on the margins. You could highlight. You know, that was my way of doing things, and I thought it was the way that most of my readers preferred to do things. And every time I would ask people, are you interested in ebooks? I'd get emails saying, no, I like hard copy. Well, what I've realized is the reason I got those responses is because I was asking people who were just like me and only wanted the hard copy. But in fact, there's a whole world out there of people who prefer the electronic book. And they make electronic notes in their book. They highlight things electronically. A lot of them report things to me such as, in their country, wherever it is, I remember I heard about this from a reader in India. It's almost impossible to get a book from the United States delivered, so they don't even try. And so there are people who say, I've been wanting your books for years, but I've not been able to get them here in my country. But now they can get them electronically on Kindle, and they're very happy about that. Other people prefer it. And there's any number of readers, either younger, who perhaps live in an apartment. They don't have as much room for books as if they lived in a house and were able to fill rooms full of books. There are older readers who are downsizing and trying to clear out the clutter. And one way they're doing it is through the ebook. So I'm getting a lot of people of all ages who respond very positively to the ebook. And I still have other people who say, I want the hard copy, so I'm in a situation where I have to do both. The bad part about that, from the point of view of someone who does self-publishing, is that you have to create one version of the book that is formatted as an ebook and one version of the book that is formatted for a hard copy. And so basically, you either have to pay for or do that job twice. And if you do your own proofreading, you have to proofread it twice. So if there's a book out there that I offer electronically and hard copy, I've proofread it so many times that I see it in my nightmares now. You know, so that, you know, those are all things to think about. But overall, I think it's a good thing. And I really like being able to reach people who are interested in sane, sensible physical training, diet, and nutrition advice, but have a hard time getting it. And so this is just a way of helping to bring good advice to more people, which ultimately is, you know, the reason why I'm doing this, and you know, probably I would assume the reason why we're all doing it. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, hopefully will be my legacy.
I'm curious, have you had new people discover you because of the ebooks, because of Amazon? People that never necessarily stumbled upon your website before or any of the other stuff that you've done?
I have had new people discover me, and I have had people who read Dinosaur Training 20 years ago and for some reason hadn't kept up with me and didn't know that I've done, you know, almost 20 books since that. And they, you know, one guy got an email last week from a guy who, quote, rediscovered me as the result of one of those Amazon emails that said, hey, you bought this book, you might like this book, and listed Pavel, Dan John, Paul Wade, Brooks Kubik. And the guy said, Brooks Kubik? Gosh, I didn't know he was still around. And so he then reached out to me, signed up for my daily emails, my website, and ordered some hard copy books as a result of that Amazon email. And then there was, you know, there was one fascinating story of a young man, a university student in India, whose girlfriend told him that he needed to get in better shape, needed to start working out. And so he got on the internet and he looked around for some workout programs and he saw some of the YouTube videos of crazy things people do and started trying to do them. And as you might expect, didn't get very good results. And so he said to his girlfriend, well, I tried the working out that you wanted me to do, but it doesn't work. And she said, no, you're doing the wrong thing. We need to find something that works for you. And turns out she was a medical student. So she asks one of her professors in medical school in India for a recommendation of a good book for her boyfriend who wants to start working out. And the professor recommended Dinosaur Training. Don't know where or when the professor got a copy of Dinosaur Training, but that's what happened. So that's the recommendation. The young man then gets on Amazon and looks me up, Amazon, Brooks Kubik, Dinosaur Training, and lo and behold, he finds some of my ebooks and immediately starts downloading them so that he can start working out, so that his girlfriend will be happy and everything will be wonderful in his life. I thought that was a great story.
It is.
And you know, it's the kind of thing that maybe it would have happened without doing the ebooks, maybe not, don't know, but it did, and I'm glad that it did.
Clarence, I know you haven't made the jump to the electronic books yet, but I also do know that you do sell your products on Amazon. I'm curious how much Amazon and how much directly from your website. I mean, have new people discovered you via Amazon?
Well, I'm sure they have. Actually, it's interesting, our experience with Amazon. Amazon discovered us way back in the, I guess it was back in the 90s. And we didn't know who the hell Amazon was. And at that point, we were selling about 5% of our books to bookstores and so on. And the rest of them we were doing on our own, just face-to-face. And now that's pretty much changed, where we sell about 95% on Amazon and 5% direct. What Brooks said about the mailing rate making a big difference, we certainly are encountering that. And we've had, by the way, that was a wonderful story about India. Certainly something you should be proud of. But we've had people in India, too, and the problem where they can't get mail there. Carol is the one that handles this, my wife. And we have gotten some books to those people. They seem to know how to do it. But I realize it certainly is a problem, and the postage rates become more and more of a problem. So if people can get it through ebook on Amazon, or in many cases they can get the hard copy from Amazon in some way that wouldn't be economical to get it from us. So there's a lot of good things going on, and there's no question that we are going to have to explore that and motivated to hear what Brooks has said, that we'd certainly like to be exposed to more people. But Amazon has been a wonderful thing, and I don't know where we would be without Amazon. Just a wonderful vehicle to kind of a window on the world, so to speak, introducing us all the way around. And certainly have reached a lot of people. I'm sure that's been true for Brooks as well.
That's a great thing. One thing I'm just going to throw out while I'm listening to you both talk is you both also have some recorded products. Brooks has several videos, and Clarence, you have some DVDs and some CDs, and I think even some cassettes. I would like to see both of you consider creating downloadable products for those where somebody could just purchase it and you're just sending them an email file and they get to listen to it and there's no shipping, no nothing. I'd like to see both of you look into that in the future so you don't have to deal with the inventory.
We did our DVDs with Wayne Galosh in Australia, and I just got an email from him recently asking if it was okay with us if he would do what you just said with the DVDs. So I know that that's a coming thing. We're not doing it right now, but Wayne and I both have access to our three DVDs, so he sells his and we sell ours. So that's something that I have heard about, and you know, that's something that's coming too. We just haven't done it for a long time. We've just focused so much on trying to write new articles and keep up with things. My articles now, this, like this article I'm writing about, this new recommendation of 2 to 4 hours of activity a week on the job, that report just came out in the last month or so. So we've tried to stay on top of that, and in the process have kind of let the functionality of our website deteriorate. So this has been a big focus here in the last month or so. We've redone the website completely. People go on there, I think they'll find it's much more accessible. Instead of having to scroll down over 400 article listings, now on each page there's a navigation box where they can go to the 10 categories of articles that we have. We've also added a lot more photos, which I think makes it a lot more exciting and hopefully motivational. But we're very proud of that change. Invite people to take a look at that. The website is a lot more fun, and a lot more people can drill down into the topic that they're interested in, I think, so much better than they could in the past. And I'm glad we finally did it. We probably should have done it a long time ago. We've got a wonderful library of photos. Frank Zane talks about having 1,000 photos. My guess is that we have 1,000 photos too, taken over many decades. A lot of them are in transparencies and things that have been hard to get onto the website. So we're trying to work on that too. And a lot of things going on. Obviously, there's change and we have to keep up with it.
Well, you have so much good information that it's sad for the current crop of people out there to not know about you and about all of what you're doing. You know, I really enjoyed Take Charge was the book you sent me, right? The most recent one?
Yes.
I really enjoyed that book. And this is a point that I want to make to both of you. I had to sit and scan every page of that book into my computer before I could read it. Scan a page, flip it over. Scan a page, turn the page. Do you know how long it took me longer to scan the book and then it took to read it? But it was worth the effort. So I, for one, will be very happy when you do go digital so I can read everything that you've written that I haven't read already.
Well, it's amazing what you do. I don't know how the hell you do it. I don't know how you do these interviews. Obviously, you don't have notes. How do you do it? Keep the chain of the interview going, and got to have a pretty darn flexible mind.
What did I say before we started this? I don't know where this is going, guys. I had no idea where we were going with it. I was trying to think of questions earlier, and I went, okay, there's the parallels, there's the differences, the Olympic lifting, powerlifting, both lawyers. And I finally, after I gave myself a headache of trying to figure out what we were going to do, I went, it'll be fine. We'll figure it out as we go along. So, Brooks, what's next?
Well, in the short term, I've got the June issue of the Dinosaur Files Quarterly that I'm finishing up. And for those who don't know, the Dinosaur Files is an old-fashioned magazine that I used to do in a monthly format, but now I'm doing it in a quarterly format. And we're doing it both hard copy and, guess what, Kindle ebook. So people can get hard copy if they want hard copy, and they can get Kindle ebook if they prefer that. I've got that. I've got other ebooks coming up, another ebook course to write. We've got Legacy of Iron, the novel set in the late 1930s, featuring a young man who, telling the story of a young man who learned strength training from Grimmick and Stanko and the other greats of the York Barbell Company. That's a 5-book series, and we just put the first book, Legacy of Iron, on Amazon as a Kindle ebook. Getting a lot of good feedback about that, and so we'll be putting the whole series up. If I had 48 hours a day, 48 days a week, and if I were able to clone myself and there were 10 of me, you know, I'd be able to get all this stuff up there immediately, but, you know, it takes time. And the other thing that we're going to be doing throughout the year is I'm working on this new series of courses, and they come out hard copy or Kindle ebook. And what I'm doing is each course covers a particular topic, and it pulls together all of my years of training and everything that I've learned, changes I've made in my approach, things I've discovered that work better than things that I did 20 years ago or 30 years ago or even 10 years ago. And I'm trying, you know, questions from people, feedback. You know, you get people asking the same question enough times, eventually you realize it's probably something that you need to address. You know, so I do that, and that's the reason for these courses. And I really enjoy them because they let me just take a topic and just really drill down and cover it in detail so that hopefully all of the questions are answered. It's a little bit like what Perry Rader used to do in Iron Man. Iron Man came out every 2 months, and for many years, Perry Rader would have a really long, detailed training article in each issue. And, you know, it was always a different topic, but, you know, it was a long, basically, it would be an ebook in today's world. It was a long, detailed article, and, you know, you could tell that he was really putting a lot of effort into those articles and really trying to make them as complete as possible. He was able to do that because he published Iron Man back in the day when printed magazines did very well. The world's different now, and so I do it as courses and as ebooks, but I'm trying to do much the same sort of thing. You know, there will be other projects, other books. You know, you mentioned the audiobooks and CDs and DVDs, and we've got some things that we're doing in that area, much along the lines of what you had talked about. So we've just got a lot of good material coming out for people. And the idea is to give people lots of opportunities to select good, sensible training advice and diet and nutrition advice, as opposed to doing what so many do, which is just getting onto the internet and starting to do some searches and just getting a lot of stuff that is out there that really isn't the best. You know, there's a lot of information on the internet, but there's a whole lot of bad information. And one of the problems with having so much information available is that it makes it difficult for people to separate the wheat from the chaff and to really find the good, useful information and focus on that. And, you know, so I feel compelled to just keep putting more out there because it helps more people into the world of sensible training and sensible diet and nutrition.
It is a huge problem because the people that are out there reading all this stuff don't have the experience to know what is the good and what is the bad. And most of the bad stuff is written a lot more colorfully, a lot more exciting, more sexy. You know, your stuff, Clarence's stuff, is very matter of fact. This is what you do.
Not sexy?
Oh, I'm sorry, Clarence, but no, it's not.
Are you seriously saying that 50 Shades of Dino is not sexy?
I must have missed that one. You got to send me a copy of that one, Brooks.
It's a great title, but Trudy would kill me.
You just broke up real bad, but I was going to say, I'm going to have to talk to Trudy about that one. Did that get her approval?
Yeah, I don't think it would, but no, you're absolutely right. Hyperbole and sexy sells. It grabs attention. And, you know, it is difficult to compete in that kind of world if you are offering, again, what I refer to as a common sense or a real world approach to these issues. And, you know, that's something that I've faced from day one. You know, I'm sure that, you know, Clarence has fought his version of that battle. Dan John has. I think, you know, the people that put out the quality training information, I think all fight that battle. And it's a battle that, you know, if you look at the history of physical culture, it's a battle that's been going on for ages. The old ink on paper magazines, you know, you had some that took one approach and some that took another approach. You had bitter divisions among the readers, and, you know, some favored one and some favored the other. It's a problem that only continues to grow. And all you can do, I think, ultimately, is just continue to make quality information available and hope and trust that quality information will prevail in the marketplace of ideas.
Well, there's going to be people that are always going to go for that flashy, glitzy stuff, and they're going to discover this doesn't work, or I can't do this and hold down a job, or this just hurts too much. And, you know, then they back off, and you both have written about this time and time again, they back off on what they're doing and miraculously they start improving.
And then what happens 9 times out of 10 is they immediately jump into something else that is equally as damaging and equally as non-productive, and they hurt themselves, or they give up in frustration, or they back off and things start to improve, and then they go after the newest, latest, and greatest super program. You know, if people could just get away from the miracle programs and the miracle supplements and the wonder drugs and the super this and super that, and simply focus on training smart and intelligently and progressively, doing things that they enjoy doing and staying at it, being consistent. I think Clarence used that term earlier, you know, training regularly and consistently. That's really the answer to 99% of the questions, or 99% of the problems.
Yeah, that's definitely the thing is the consistency, because people will go in and kill themselves, but there's no long haul. Since you mentioned Dan again, two of Dan John's big points are things that you keep saying as well. One is finish the program. You know, don't just keep changing programs every 2 weeks. If you set out a 3-month leg specialization program and you map it out, finish the program. If you quit after 5 or 6 weeks, how can you say it worked or it didn't work? You didn't do it for the long haul. And the other thing is a little for a long time, which is the same as consistency.
Those are good rules and well said.
Clarence, you've updated the website, and what is next for CNC Bass? Do we have another book in the near future or the distant future?
Well, there probably is another book in the future, but I don't know how close it is. I've made it a point to not write the same book again, so each book is different. And people say you're working on a book. Well, we are, in the sense of producing new articles for the website every month. Take Charge is basically the articles and the things that I wrote about on the website in the 5 years after Great Expectations. So we're putting together the material for a new book, but I don't know what it's going to be. Actually, I just sat down before writing Take Charge to look at what we had, and it didn't take very long to realize that we had plenty for a new book. I'm really very proud of the Take Charge books. We keep pushing that. The Great Expectations book, I feel like, really hasn't gotten the credit that it should have. It's still the focus on what I do, with a lot of explaining about the not only the how, but the why, and a wide scope of things, and about my peaking for age 70. I think there's just a lot of good stuff there. People ask about what two books we'd recommend that they get, and really those two books would fill the bill for most people, with the Great Expectations book having kind of how to, exactly how I do it, with details and with options, and the Take Charge book focusing on the many different options that are out there. There are just many ways to do it, and as Brooks just said, one of the keys is showing up, continuing to do the the training, do it on a regular basis. And then the secret to that is doing it in a way that you enjoy. And I think the key thing to maintaining motivation is progress. So I'm always trying to improve. And at 77, you'd think that that would not be possible. Well, it's not possible to be stronger than I was when I was 25 or 35, but it is possible to find goals. So all of my rowing workouts or my workouts on the skier, which is another Concept 2 product, they have just a wonderful monitor. So I'm monitoring what I'm doing, recording it. And when I sit down for a workout, I look to see what I did last time, and I try to find some way I can improve. And I almost always find a way. So it makes every workout satisfying. So I think my future is simply to continue writing about how to do that and trying to bring in the newest things. Just with the computer technology and things, and where the research can now be done, not just saying this is how it should be and so on and so on, but actually using MRIs to looking down into the cells to see what's happening, so we're actually able to document it, and finding out things about like epigenetics, which is a new idea that I just wrote about here last month on the main article that's up on the website right now. It's called Epigenetic Specificity. But we think that our genes are written in stone, that it's something that we have and we can't do anything about it. Epigenetics indicates that lifestyle changes, the expression changes what your genes do. So by exercising, you can make a bad gene less active and a good gene more active. And finding out more and more about things like that, and just so uplifting about how important it is to train your body and then train the specificity thing, is that it's only the worked muscles that are making the epigenetic changes. And so there's an article, a study there where they did pumping with just one leg. They explored it, found out that the epigenetic changes were only taking place in the active leg. So I used that as a stepping stone for the reason for training your whole body. Not if you're just focusing on running, you're neglecting about half of the muscles in your body. So that's been a continuing theme. That's what I'm going to continue doing, trying to discover these things and writing about them and eventually putting them into a new book. And obviously, we will have to explore this ebook thing. Brooks makes a very good case for it, and been a little slow on a lot of these things, but we'll catch up eventually. Thanks to people like you for getting us out there and telling people about us. We certainly do appreciate that.
Well, you know, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me, but it's sad to me that people who are dispensing good information are sometimes kind of lost in the shuffle because you're not the glitzy, sexy, brand new, exciting, blah, 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 blah. Now, I've been talking to you two gentlemen for just about an hour and a half here, and I think it's probably about time to wrap this up. So I'd like to, let's start with you, Brooks. Any closing comments or thoughts?
Well, I just want to say that I really appreciate your having me on the show, and I've appreciated the opportunity to speak with Clarence. I've known of Clarence for many years and known him, you know, fairly casual way through emails for a number of years, and really appreciated the opportunity to chat with him. One of the really interesting things in Clarence's life is that he's trained his entire life, it seems. I think from one of the books, it was from a very, very early age, like 5 or 6, 7 or 8 or something like that. And Clarence can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, he's been doing this for a very long time. And one very interesting and I would suggest encouraging thing that he's done is to find new passions and new challenges at different stages of his life and approach them in a very, very serious, very demanding, very strenuous, very challenging way, which of course is the journey that he captures in his various books. But training for the Presidential Physical Fitness Award, high school sports, Olympic weightlifting, bodybuilding, competitive rowing. You know, it's just absolutely amazing the different things that Clarence has done. And I would suggest that that's one of the secrets to his longevity and anyone's longevity in physical culture. Find things that you like to do and work at them really hard and really passionately, and be aware that it's okay to move on to other things and other challenges at different stages of your life. I think that's a very underlooked truth and a very important one. And I know that I've done a lot of that in my own life. I'm younger than Clarence, but I've made some of those changes from one thing to another at different points in my life. And I think that's something that people need to be aware that it's not only okay to do, but it's a good thing to do. So for that reason, I've particularly enjoyed this interview, and I appreciate Clarence's time. And Bill, I appreciate your time, and hope everyone who's listening has enjoyed it.
I thank you, Brooks. And now, Mr. Bass, your final thoughts.
Oh, what Brooks said is certainly right. I started lifting my dad's barbell when I was about 13, and I never stopped. And I think one of the, and Brooks explained exactly what's kept me going, to keep looking for things where I can improve, going from the Olympic lifting, where I thought I pretty much topped out, going to the bodybuilding, where I had a lot of room to improve, and then going to the rowing and going to the ski erg, always finding something to work on, something that excited me, something that I could get better on. And I think that certainly is the secret. And like Brooks, I certainly do appreciate the opportunity to be with you, Bill, for an hour and a half. And I'm very impressed with all that Brooks has done. He's just so imaginative, thinking about ways where he can work with his passion and help other people. And he's obviously very skilled and very smart and very imaginative, and finding a way, kind of carving out a niche for himself that is a new niche. It's the Brooks Kubik niche. And that's a good thing. That's certainly the recipe for success. And I certainly wish him continued to do what he's doing and for a very long time. And thank you again, Bill.
It's been a pleasure having you both here. We've been talking with Clarence Bass and Brooks Kubik here on Real World Fitness. And this has been your host, Bill, obviously. And thanks for listening. We will see you guys next week. Everybody have an awesome week. Real World Fitness is a production of the Serotalk Podcast Network in cooperation with KosiabaFitness.com. All questions, comments, and feedback should be submitted to resources@serotalk.com. If you're listening on a mobile device, use your iBlink radio app to submit an iReport. Promotional consideration paid for by Audible.com.